through the book of Revelation. This morning we're going to be spending our time thinking about this city right here, the city of Jerusalem. Now I'm going to hand this around. I know it's going to be awkward, there's probably going to be some clattering, and people are going to have to get up and carry it to somebody else, you know, and all the rest of that. But there's nothing like being able to really get in close. So I'm going to hand this off. You guys pass it back to each other, however you need to do. And we'll also be looking at some pictures on the screen in just a minute. This is the fabled city of Jerusalem. This is the view of Jerusalem that you get from standing on the Mount of Olives. When Jesus, in Matthew 24, delivered what we call the Olivet Discourse, he was looking at this very scene, save for the fact that, of course, many of these structures have been built in successive centuries. The lower lines of the temple itself, the Temple Mount itself, are the stones from Herod's day. So if you have a look at this, I won't be able to point, you know, for each of you the given locations here, but I'll be helping you out on the screen as well. So this is the city that we're talking about this morning. I'm going to be looking at all of its history by beginning in Genesis chapter 14. Please open your Bibles to Genesis and chapter 14. What you see on the screen there is an aerial view of the Kidron Valley. The Kidron Valley runs just like this down through here. The Kidron Valley meets the Valley of Hinnom right here. This is the Valley of Hinnom running up like that. So this is the Gehenna of your Bible, and this is the Kidron, and this is the Mount of Olives. That photograph is standing right about here and looking straight across at this wall right there and the Golden Dome, the Muslim Dome of the Rock. In Genesis chapter 14, we have what is likely our first reference to this location, to this wonderful, beautiful, fertile, verdant location in the hill country of Judea. So here, I chose the aerial view partly because you can see all these green hills going off. This is the view looking directly north, north in this direction, you know, of the surrounding territory. In all directions, that's what it looks like, except as you stand on this hill and look off in this direction. In that direction, the hill falls steeply down, clear down to the Dead Sea, lowest place on earth, and you can see the water from various locations along this ridgeline here of the Mount of Olives. In Genesis chapter 14, verse 18, it reads like this. Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought out bread and wine. He was a priest of God Most High, and he blessed, this is Abram, and said, blessed be Abram of God Most High, possessor of heaven and earth. And blessed be God Most High, who has delivered your enemies into your hands. This location was first occupied by Jebusites. When Melchizedek appears on the scene about 1900 years before Christ, the city is known as Salem. It is the Salem of the Jebusites. It is the Salem of Jebus. It is the Salem of Jerus. It is Jerusalem. As the years go by, it becomes Jerusalem. And the first time we have a king, a priest in Salem, God Most High is the God that he serves. And Abram, whose name hasn't even been changed yet, Abram, who will become the father of many nations due to these promises, this man, Abram, he meets him in this area and is identified by the priest of God Most High as a man of God Most High. There's not a lot of information in Genesis 14, but it is fascinating information. It leaves us wondering about that one true God Most High and the service through a priest in this city 1900 years before Jesus the Christ. And so at this point, it's just sort of like an inkling in Bible history of what this city is going to become. Now, we're going to turn a few books over to Joshua and look at chapter 10. You have before you on the screen another aerial photograph of the general region of Jerusalem. This particular photograph is from the northwest and is looking, as you can see here, I put this indicator in, to the southeast in this case. So in this case, excuse me, this is the Temple Mount. This is the Mount of Olives, and that is the Dead Sea in the background, falling down from the ridgeline across the desert to the lowest and highest place on Earth. And so again, though, you can see now, this being more likely in the summertime because of how brown these hills are, but you're looking at the city of Jerusalem now, and you'll notice the texture of the immediate city, these various different hills that comprise this town. We'll be talking about that somewhat much later when we get into the book of Revelation. Also here, I'd like you to see the existing walls of the city, very prominently and identifiable, a little tougher right through here. They come and then turn this corner and down through here like this. Those walls, as I say, were built much, much later, built by Muslims, as a matter of fact. But especially in this Temple Mount area, built upon stones that Herod the Great, who we'll hear about in a little bit, had laid in his great building project. At this point, about 1250 B.C., Joshua chapter 10 begins like this. It came about when Adonai Zedek, king of Jerusalem, heard that Joshua had captured Ai and had utterly destroyed it, just as he had done to Jericho and its king, so he had done to Ai and its king, and that the inhabitants of Gibeon had made peace with Israel and were within their land, that he feared greatly, because Gibeon was a great city, like one of the royal cities, and because it was greater than Ai and all its men were mighty. Therefore, Adonai Zedek, king of Jerusalem, sent to Hoham, king of Hebron, and to Piram, king of Jarmuth, and to Japhia, king of Lachish, and to Deber, king of Eglon, saying, come up to me and help me, and let us attack Gibeon, for it has made peace with Joshua and with the sons of Israel. So, what do all the inhabitants of this beautiful area think when they see the coming of the children of Israel? Well, the word goes before them, and it goes terrifyingly before them, and knocking over every city that they come to. These people are tremendously powerful. I am really afraid. I don't think I can handle it by myself. I want to call the surrounding kings. You come and help me. Now, I'm suspecting, brethren, right here, that already by this time, this area is achieving prominence. Because he doesn't say, I'm going to go help you. What does he say? You come, you help me. Okay? And so, this is the site that apparently is most valuable. This is the site that's most prominent. This is the site that perhaps has the greatest economic power. This is the site that needs the greatest protection. And so now, it is Jerusalem. Now, it is an important kind of a city. Turning next, brethren, I should mention right here, Jerusalem means foundation or habitation of peace. So, not only were the Jebusites there, but as time goes by, the letter gets changed, and you get to Jerusalem, what it means is the foundation of peace. What it means is, alternate translation, the habitation of peace. What is attached to this place is peace from the most ancient antiquity. Now then, let's turn to 2 Samuel and look into chapter 5. So again, a couple of books later, you come to 2 Samuel and in the 5th chapter. Verse 6 says, now, the king and his men went to Jerusalem against the Jebusites, the inhabitants of the land, and they said to David, you shall not come in here, but the blind and lame shall turn you away, thinking, David cannot enter here. Nevertheless, David captured, what does it become now? The stronghold of Zion. That is, as it would come to be called later, but it's identified here in the history, the city of David. Well, it was the city of peace, It was the city of Melchizedek. It's the city of the Jebusites. It's the foundation and habitation of peace. It's a lot of things to a lot of people. But now, as David comes over these hills, as David has been anointed by God to become the king, as David is gathering his forces and will become a great and mighty king, as David enters into the picture, this will become the city of David. And David in verse 18 said on, or 8 rather, said on that day, whoever would strike the Jebusites, let him reach the lame and the blind, who are hated by David's soul, through the water tunnel. Therefore they say, the blind or the lame shall not come into the house. So David lived in the stronghold and called it the city of David. And David built all around from the Milo, particular area in there, and inward. Now, what do we have? This is about, brethren, 1000 B.C. It is the first word in the in the Bible that the word Zion occurs. We're not sure what Zion actually means. Most people think that it refers to ridge, that it means ridge. As you can see, there's a ridge right here standing over the Kidron Valley. But, you know, we're really not very sure about that. This is also the first time that the term City of David appears in your Bible. So you want to make a note at these verses. That's a pretty significant verse identifying Zion, identifying the city of David, and giving us, of course, David's arrival to take possession. Well fortified. People are quite confident 1,000 years before Christ, 900 years after Melchizedek met Abram, that this city cannot be conquered. Ah, but it can. Now there have long been fortifications running along this ridgeline right here. And you'll notice a structure, archaeological digs and whatnot, that's going on in this area right here. This is where the spring of Gihon is. This is where there have been discovered in recent years tunnels reaching down to water sources, which they had to protect with an outcropping of fortifications, because that's the water source for all the people living behind the wall. David and his men were able to enter somehow, move through this tunnel a long way, climb up what is apparently a tall vertical shaft that Don and I have seen, and were able then to enter through behind the walls of the city and eventually take this area. Now, particularly in this picture, what I want you to see is this area right here, which, if you were to draw a line like this, would look like the bottom part of Florida, right? You see that? We've got this outcropping right here. It runs uphill all this way and continues uphill to where the tabernacle will be placed in David's day and where the temple will eventually be built. So this ridge line running through here, running uphill all the way, is the city of David. This is the area that David first took control of. This is the area that David would conquer, which had been enclosed with walls already at that time. In the next picture, you can see, again, it's been outlined now in the red right here. There's a central valley here. Here's the Valley of Gehenna, the Hinnom Valley. Here's that Kidron Valley we were talking about. Here's the temple. Now, here are excavations taking place everywhere. And so many photos, if you look carefully, this structure right here, all this area right here, will just be dirt. It's only recently that all of the dirt's been removed. The foundations of antiquity have been discovered. And in fact, it's only, I think, about 3 months ago that after, you know, enormous amount of effort and expense, they finally opened it to the public. Made me sick. It happened about 6 months after I was there the second time. I thought I didn't get to see any of it, except from the distance. And by the way, I've told you this before, but it takes 3.5 hours to walk around this part of the city, which is the main part that's enclosed by walls today.
And in walking around there, I was able to come up along this road right here and on that sidewalk. And when I looked at all of this, saw the signs, you know, soon to be open, all the rest, drooled all over. That's my spittle you see on the sidewalk, and you go there and now you go badly, you know, in there. But all of that is the Milo that we were talking about earlier. This is the area, or oval, I'm sorry. This is the oval that you'll see in other passages. So this part was also owned by David. Yeah, thank you for helping me with this. Okay. And so this is what we're talking about, a relatively small area in Jerusalem now, but the place where the fort was. Okay, buddy, over to 1 Kings now. Another couple of books. Come over to 1 Kings in chapter 6. 1 Kings 6, we begin reading. It came about in the 480th year after the sons of Israel came out of the land of Egypt, in the fourth year of Solomon's reign over Israel, in the month of Ziv, which is the second month, that he began to build the house of the Lord. As for the house which King Solomon built for the Lord, its length was 60 cubits, be about 90 feet, its width 20 cubits, so about 30, and its height about 45 feet, 30 cubits. The porch in front of the nave and of the house was 20 cubits in length, corresponding to the width of the house. Its depth along the front of the house was 10 cubits, of course, cubits about a foot and a half. Also for the house, he made windows with artistic frames, and against the wall of the house he built stories encompassing the walls of the house around both the nave and the inner sanctuary. Thus, he made side chambers all around. Now that's a pretty very specific time reference, isn't it? If you've got a pencil or a pen there, you might want to write in the margin, we can get down to the month of 960 B.C., when Solomon begins to build upon the Temple Mount. This natural rock, which has long ago been excavated in molten form, you know, for millenniums now, was first taken on by David to put the tabernacle there, and then by his son Solomon to place the first temple, 960 B.C. This first temple was right there. I mean, maybe there or there, but it was there. Okay? And that temple, we're going to be studying at some length in our studies of the Revelation, and especially here again today. That temple, of course, matters. Really matters. And so, here is the designated place of God where that temple will be built by the dynasty, David first, as we'll see in the sermon time this morning, and then by Solomon, his son. So once again, this is your Kidron Valley, and coming again, following through right here, that where this road is. And this, of course, is the Mount of Olives upon which you've seen the view that's just been passed around right there. Both this structure were built by Muslims, 670 A.D., I think it is, for this structure right here. It's not very clear, but as you were to stand at this corner, the stones from about this level down are ones that Herod built. From that level up, have through the centuries been torn down in various invasions and rebuilt so that they're Muslim stones now. Okay, skip over to verse 38 in chapter 6. Last verse of chapter 6. And in the 11th year, in the month of Bul, which is the 8th month, the house was finished throughout all its parts according to all its plans. So he was 7 years in building it. This was a temple. This was a temple that is unlike anything the world has ever seen. It took 7 years, vast sums of wealth, as we'll see later, and divine guidance to produce that first temple. God invested enormous amounts of energy and forethought and then resources and finally 7 years with thousands of builders to put a temple on the stones of that hill, which you can visit now down to this day. Now, all I want to say, you know, next is that from 960 to 586, Jerusalem just really suffers. Egypt takes over, Arabia gets it back from them, Syria moves in and they take it away. Then they have their various civil wars of their own going on back and forth, north and south, fighting over it. You know, until Babylon in 586 will get a hold of all of this and take that first temple in 586 and tear it down to bedrock. God was displeased. This most magnificent structure, built by Solomon and David, as we'll see later, this structure meant so much to God, he terminates because of the sin of these people. Now, this is just a wonderful shot. I really appreciate this particular aerial. But you're looking here just due north, just like that. This wall just runs almost perfectly north and south. You're looking to the north. This is the oval I told you about. This is the first part of the city of David coming down the ridgeline. Here now you can so clearly see this Kidron Valley, which I walked through. It's just a great shot to help you appreciate the size, the scope, the magnificence of the Temple Mount itself, not to mention, you know, all the rest of the city of Jerusalem. Here's your Mount of Olives. This is Mount Scopus right here. It's a little bit higher, though it doesn't look like it, over the Mount of Olives. And so again, the picture of the tent around is standing here and looking across here. Then, Ezra and Nehemiah, after 70 years of captivity in Babylon, are ordered by God to lead a total of 3 kind of exoduses from Babylonian captives back to Jerusalem, where they will begin building another temple. And especially with Nehemiah in 444 BC, the walls of the city will be rebuilt. So you can see, you know, very clearly these walls, again in this aerial photograph. This is the south. This is the north. I keep spinning your attention. Yeah, I guess. You know, these various aerial shots right here. But this then is the Kidron Valley, then again the Mount of Olives over here. So, Ezra and Nehemiah, despite God's displeasure with the preceding generation, are selected by God and say, you know what? We're going to do this again. And so they come back in. They begin building what is now a second temple. And of course, the people wept over it. It wasn't so beautiful as what they had before. They were now, you know, kind of exiles in their own country. And so they've come back, you know, with very little resources, and the temple is not going to be nearly the magnificent structure that it had been before. Now, go a little bit more rapidly here. In 332 B.C., we start getting into the history that is not in the Bible. This is the period of time, 400 years, that precedes Jesus. And so in that period of time, we have biblical silence. There are no biblical books that are written. But 332 B.C., Alexander the Great comes and he takes the city, and for 300 years, back and forth and back and forth, the Ptolemies and the Seleucids and all the problems that they had from other nations, for 300 years, the walls of Jerusalem are assailed. And for 300 years, they're built up and they're knocked down. They're built up again and they're breached again. And it goes back and forth, brethren, like a tide going in and out, the bloodshed that sweeps over this city. Again, I realize this shot, this is the south, that's the north, but here you can really see the Mount of Olives. It's this day, not these church buildings or other spires that have been built. So it's really easy from clear down at the Dead Sea to look up at the ridgeline and be able to identify the Mount of Olives. You can see those 3 spires right there. So, to the somewhere on that hill, Jesus looked down upon the city in Matthew chapter 24, as I say, we'll be studying it. In this picture, too, it's not so clear, and you would not have been able to see much of it in the photograph I handed around either. But looking at this line right here coming this way, and from this line right here coming down again, see how you've got kind of a little pyramid right there, and it's whiter compared to everything else? Those are, all of that, above ground crypts. they are graves. For millenniums, people wanted to be buried here. This is the city of Abraham. This is the city of Melchizedek. This is the city of the Most High God. This is the city of David. This is the city of Solomon. This is the city of so many prophets. It is the city of all cities. And so, people have, whether Jews or Arabs, but mostly Jews, have come to be buried here. So when you go to Jerusalem, one of the things that is just most shocking when you get there is that from the walls itself, you know, and for great distances, you just see nothing but oversized receptacles for coffins that are made out of marble or limestone, you know, by the thousands and thousands and thousands. In 63 BC, it was conquered by Pompey and therefore Rome. In 37 BC, Herod the Great began a 46-year building project. In Solomon 7, it'll take Herod the Great 46. Okay, so in 19 BC, he begins building 46 years of what would become a temple that far eclipsed anything the Jews had ever seen, I think even in the days of Solomon. And so, this would be the south, looking that way, up to the north. Here's the Mount of Olives again. And quite a few of these structures, part of this arch right here, you know, exist to this day. And so what Herod had built, we are now able to identify with great certainty, 2,000 years later, is still here. He engaged a massive amount of excavation and then fortification, you know, and building it up to make this gigantic temple platform. So that, he added a number of different structures. This would be the temple itself. But the point of all of that is only to say that you now have a third temple, and by far the most magnificent that this world had ever seen, you know, up to that time, and perhaps nobody having seen it really in its magnificence to this day, ever. Until, in 70 AD, according to numerous prophecies, it was destroyed, and not one stone was left upon another. These are those stones. In the Temple Mount walls, that, you know, the foundation walls that hold up the mount itself, the Romans left that. So you can see something of the magnificence, and therefore be able to know these Romans are the most powerful thing on earth. These are just the foundation stones. And they're taller from here to here than you are. They weigh in excess, some of these, of 400 tons each. And that's just the foundation. 100 and some odd feet above all of this, every stone that was on top of the Temple Mount and all of its structures, including the temple itself, not one stone was left upon another, and they were cast down here. It's only been in your lifetime that this dirt has been removed. Those stones have been found and left in place so that to this day it is a tribute to the power of Rome and to the perfect fulfillment, verbatim, word for word in its minutest detail, fulfilling the prophecies of Jesus and Old Testament prophets as well. This scene, brethren, is really an astonishing thing. It is proof that the future can be foretold by the prophets of God alone. And it is proof of just enormous forces that are involved first in the construction and then in the destruction. And so, this is the western wall looking toward the south, viewing the wall of Jerusalem itself that is in the south, and the structures that you come in on. Don and I have been here again, you know, come down this very staircase to view these stones themselves. This will give you a scale right there of how big those stones are. This lady is immediately adjacent, you know, stones larger than people are. Okay, so that's Titus Vespasian's destruction, 70 AD. Okay, now, brethren, before we go to the next slide, I'm just going to read here something I wrote. Emperor Hadrian will rebuild the city in 138, and Rome is still controlling it. It's captured by the Persians in 614, and then by the Muslims in 637. The Turks take it in 1077 AD, the Egyptian Arabs in 1098, Catholic Crusaders in 1099, Saladin, who will rule both Egypt and Syria in 1177, but he loses it to Germany in 1229. By 1244, the Tartars have it, then the Egyptians again. In 1517, the Turks get it. Egypt takes it back. The Turks get it again in 1840. And Jerusalem will remain under Turkish rule until 1948, when the United Nations gives it to the Jews, falsely so-called, out of consideration for the Holocaust, of course, but with very little thought for the Palestinians. This is none of it, of course, Bible history. But the quote I found, which I think sums it up best, is this one. There have been at least 118 separate conflicts in and for Jerusalem during the past four millennia. From local religious struggles to strategic military campaigns, it's been destroyed completely at least twice. It's been besieged 23 times. It's been attacked 52 more times, captured and recaptured 44 times, 20 revolts, innumerable riots, has only changed hands completely peacefully twice in the past 4,000 years. Jerusalem, the foundation and habitation of peace, to which the Prince of Peace, its king, would come. Is that not just one of the most astonishing ironies in the history of humankind? And is it not something to think about? He was the Prince of Peace. He came and established a lasting peace, a peace which has never been interrupted, a peace between God and man spiritually, a kingdom that is not of this earth. In other words, this is so the city of peace, but not physical peace, not of material peace. It is the city, brethren, of spiritual peace between God and man. Now, if you will, I'd like to have you grab your pencils and pens again, and I'd like to give you a list of scriptures here in this next 15 or 20 minutes that we have left. We're only going to look, as a matter of fact, at five of them, so it'll be fairly brief. But I want us to think about what, you know, does Jerusalem mean? There's a fabulous artist conception drawn by someone who was standing on the Mount of Olives and made an attempt, you know, to depict it as clearly as he could. If I'm not mistaken, this was painted in the 1800s. And so, this is Mount of Olives, looking across at the Kidron Valley, some monuments that had been built through the years that still stand to this day. You can go and visit if you like. You know, I walk down and look all around this one right here. Okay, so that is what Jerusalem looks like about 150 years ago from, you know, an artist's conception. What is Jerusalem all about? Why is the Bible so wrapped up in Jerusalem? Now again, we're only going to look at just a few of these. Here you have essentially that same view now, a photograph from recent history. And by the way, here are those tombs right here. Now, I cropped this photograph. So if you can imagine, the bottom of this photograph I cut off. And you can see tombs about down to here. Okay? It's just astonishing. There's a roadway I walked down right here, and it exhausted me. I went downhill, I don't know, a tenth of a mile maybe. And then had to come back up that thing. I did it all, knowing that the bus and all the tourists that I was with were over here, you know, and they were just standing there taking a picture. I couldn't stand it. So, you know, the tourists on the block, tore on down this hill. I snapped a picture. I got back before that bus had to leave. But, nonetheless, this photograph, you know, was close as I could get anyway, to show you, you know, the city, and how it is, brethren, also,
that magnificent as this temple platform is, you not only from various places in Jerusalem will look up at it so that it's just awesome to behold, but notice the surrounding hillside also allows you on three sides to look down upon the city as well. From the west, the north, and the east, you can just feel like you can reach out and touch the thing. It is so close. When I walked into the Kidron Valley right here, I estimated, you know, myself, that if I had 12 disciples, any volunteers? I had 12 disciples, and I was going to walk through this gate, which is the Golden Gate, and Herod's foundation, so I just pulled around that. By the way, everything you see right here, tombs. Arab tombs over here, Jewish tombs over here. Holy city for both. Muslims in this cemetery, Jews in that cemetery. It's symbolic again of the warfare that's sweeping across this city. But if I had 12 disciples, and I was going to come out of this gate, and I was going to walk the old trail that came up to the Mount of Olives, and I was just leisurely strolling along, talking to 12 men, not on any kind of mission, you know, to do it in a hurry. But I'm estimating, brethren, that in certainly 15 minutes, and maybe 10, you could take a leisurely stroll down this and up the other side to have this view as Jesus would under the words of Matthew chapter 24. But what is Jerusalem all about? We have so much history. It's like no other city on earth. Turn now to 2 Chronicles. Sorry about that. Sort of surprised me, that one. 2 Chronicles chapter 6. In 2 Chronicles 6, verses 3 through 6, then the king faced about, this is Solomon, and blessed all the assembly of Israel while all the assembly of Israel was standing. And he said, blessed be the Lord, the God of Israel, who spoke with his mouth to my father David and has fulfilled it with his hands, saying, since the day that I brought my people from the land of Egypt, I did not choose a city out of all the tribes of Israel to build a house that my name might be there. Nor did I choose any man for a leader over my people Israel. But I have chosen Jerusalem that my name might be there. And I have chosen David to be over my people, Israel. What is associated with this city, and most especially with this hilltop and its tabernacle in David's day and temple from Solomon's on, with all the problems that it's had, is the name of God. No city on earth has been so closely associated with God's name. Brethren, the name of something is what it stands for, what it represents, what it is known to be. My name is associated with preaching and forgetfulness. Okay. But, you know, your name is known. This city, the city of peace, the city of Melchizedek, the city of Abraham, the city of David, the city of Solomon, the city of all the prophecy of the Old Testament, this city is the city of God. This is the city of peace. This is the place where every quality that has ever been associated with Jehovah was selected by God to represent that name. Then, backing up a little bit in your Old Testament to 2 Samuel, 2 Samuel and chapter 6. Verses 12 through 15. Now, it was told King David, saying, the Lord has blessed the house of Obed-Edom and all that belongs to him on account of the ark of God. And David went and brought up the ark of God from the house of Obed-Edom into the city of David with gladness. So it was that when the bearers of the ark of the Lord had gone six paces, he sacrificed an ox and a fatling.
And David was dancing before the Lord with all his might. And David was wearing a linen ephod. So David and all the house of Israel were bringing up the ark of the Lord with shouting and the sound of the trumpet. Now this predates 2 Chronicles. But the name and then the presence of God. This is the place, right here, where the ark, after all this wilderness wanderings, found its way to the habitation of peace. Where David then established that movable temple we call a tabernacle because it was movable, that tent was placed on that hill. And when it was, David went nuts. David couldn't contain himself. Just dancing like a wild man, as was all of Israel. We have come to the city of peace. We have here the name of our God and His presence. Here, the Ark of the Covenant with Moses' Ten Commandments inside. In Psalm chapter 2, which we've already studied in all the work that we've had, of course, here in recent months on Psalms, both on Sunday mornings, and then again on Wednesday nights. In Psalm chapter 2, verses 4 through 6, He who sits in the heavens laughs. The Lord scoffs at them. These are all these Gentiles that are trying to fight God in the first three verses. Then He will speak to them in His anger and terrify them in His fury. But as for me, I have installed my King upon Zion, my holy mountain. Brethren, this is a messianic prophecy. We studied it a long time ago, back over it again. But this place, which began its first reference in the Bible, referencing Melchizedek, the priest of the Most High God, will become the place where God's name and God's presence, but it's also the place that the Messiah's saving reign is to be established. It is where this great king is to first establish his authority and his power over the earth. In Isaiah chapter 2, really a very similar passage as a matter of fact, but in Isaiah chapter 2 in the first four verses, the word which Isaiah the son of Amos saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem. Now, it will come about that in the last days, the mountain of the house of the Lord will be established as the chief of the mountains and will be raised above the hills, and all the nations will stream to it, and many peoples will come and say, come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob, that He may teach us concerning His ways, that we may walk in His paths, for the law will go forth from Zion, and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. And He will judge between the nations and will render decisions for many peoples. They will hammer their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation will not lift up sword against nation. Never again will they learn war. In other words, it is from this place that the gospel of that Messiah, preaching about the presence of God in His name, will go forth, originating here, not just to the Jews, but to every nation, every people, who will come streaming to a kingdom that this old hill has represented throughout all of the Old Testament. But from that location, first, the saving gospel of Jesus the Christ will be presented to both Jew and the Gentile. Now, let's come to Joel and chapter 2, and we'll close for this morning. In Joel chapter 2, which of course is quoted in Acts chapter 2, we have a very interesting passage. Joel 2, beginning at verse 28. It will come about after this. Peter, when he quotes this verse, says, in the last days. It will come about in the last days, or after this, that I will pour out my Spirit on all mankind. And your sons and daughters will prophesy. Your old men will dream dreams, your young men will see visions. And even on the male and female servants, I will pour out my spirit in those days. And I will display wonders in the sky and on the earth, blood, fire, and columns of smoke. The sun will be turned into darkness, and the moon into blood, before the great and awesome day of the Lord comes. And it will come about that whoever calls on the name of the Lord will be delivered. For on Mount Zion and in Jerusalem there will be those who escape. As the Lord has said, even among the survivors whom the Lord calls. Two things that are now associated, quoted by Joel in prophecy, fulfilled by Peter, his generation, quoted in Acts 2. The very presence of the Holy Spirit will come here and then go forth before a great and terrible day. You saw the stones, brethren, cast down into the valley. Those you saw were just on the other side of this gray dome right here, cast down onto the west side. That great and awesome and terrible day would come upon Jerusalem just after the Holy Spirit came to this place first, so that all Old Testament prophecies concerning that king might be fulfilled. Then, brethren, then, according to this prophecy and many others, Jesus included, that city's temple mount would be swept clean of every visible reference to the Old Testament, because what had come? A new covenant, a spiritual relationship for Gentiles as well as Jews. It is not rooted any longer in a physical location, but has become the kingdom of our Lord, the entire world. Okay? That, brethren, is what Jerusalem means. And of course, a thousand other passages. Thank you for the extra 2 minutes. We'll meet again in 8 and a half.